last week, though, was the Oscars, and what better person to talk to than our buddy, Paul Preston.
Jazz hands.
You there, Paul?
Twist my arm to talk about movies.
Here we go again.
He hates it.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Well, it's actually the end of the most wonderful time of the year. I love awards season, but now it's done. But it was a good one, even in a pandemic.
What did you think of the production overall, Paul?
Well, I got to lead with two things. First, that they set themselves up for trouble with, mm-hmm. despite, it didn't matter what the show was, whether it was like it was now or old shows with hosts or straight comedy routine, the Academy continues to hurt itself with two things. I call it backloading, where they just backload the awards season with all these award caliber movies. So they dump like 40 of them in the last month or 2 weeks of the award season for the short attention span of the voters, so they can vote. You know, remember my movie? It just came out.
So frustrating.
So this is bad for a number of reasons. A bunch of small films that are brilliant will get lost in the shuffle, where if they came out earlier, they might have their own big weekend and make a name for themselves and come back again in award season and remind everybody how great they were. And the worst thing is for you guys. You have like 2 weeks to watch 40 movies to know anything they're talking about at the Oscars.
Exactly. That's why I had to stream BitTorrent them all way, way ahead of time.
How dare you?
Shh, don't tell anybody.
But this is bad on all
counts. What's that?
The second thing is, in 2008, a little Oscar history, they did not nominate The Dark Knight for Best Picture. They should have. The reviews were off the, you know, just incredible. $500 million at the box office, and it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. So the Oscars came and went, and people went, meh. So the Oscars said, we need to get some of these highly regarded genre pieces into the nominees. So they expanded the nominees from 5 to 10. That's the year you may remember District 9 was nominated for Best Picture. And Inglourious Basterds. They wanted people to come and witness the Oscars again. So this year they had 8 nominees. I know you can have up to 10, but maybe just make it 10. So this year, instead of 8 movies nobody's heard of, which is mostly true, mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't heard of all of them because I'm me. I'm a freak. I'm weird. You guys are weird. But, yes. You know, if you're just a guy in Missouri running your laundromat or whatever, and you don't know what the hell these movies are, there's no way you're going to know what they are. So I say you slip Soul in there for Best Picture, maybe The Invisible Man, which flipped the genre on its ear. That movie was just awesome, with a great lead performance by Elizabeth Moss.
Really?
And it was popular. So
I just couldn't finish that one. It was so cliche to me. I'm sorry.
What?
I know.
Wow.
Trust me.
That's
I've gotten
shock.
That reaction from everybody. But I love
because I heard Invisible Man, this again, and then from the get-go, it was like, nope, this is all brand new to me. So I was I was pretty impressed. But it was popular and well-regarded. So nominate some of the genre films. I mean, the fact that Black Panther is the only Marvel movie ever nominated for Best Picture is just stupid. I mean, Endgame is like revolutionary. How do you even make that movie? just for making it, they should get some. Feige should have an Oscar anyway, just for his body of work. But I think those two things worked against the show, and it got horrible ratings.
I found it incredibly boring. Regina was my favorite. Oh my gosh, I forget her last name all of a sudden. Regina King.
Regina King.
She was it. She was it for me. And then I was like, I'm tuned out. And then a couple of the awards, people accepting the awards, I was like, okay, that's cool. Like some of like the, you know, that was, I was.
What
so
else? What else don't you like in the world?
Nothing.
And in life?
Everything
in the world.
Burn it all down. Okay, look. I just pounded my microphone. There we go.
Yeah.
I just pounded my microphone, Paul. There we go. Right.
Okay, well, they took a lot of risks.
They did.
I mean, the one thing I was actually glad for, and a lot of people didn't like this, but I'm like, let them talk. Let the speeches happen. I mean, there's nothing more embarrassing than bringing up that music underneath somebody while they're being heartfelt. I mean, Thomas Vinterberg wins for Best International Film. He's thanking everybody. He tells that story about how his daughter passed during production, and it's like heartbreaking. He's sitting there crying. If they started going,
oh,
So thankfully, they you know, that's what's great about the Independent Spirit Awards is all the speeches are fantastic, you know. But I thought the tables were a good vibe, give it that Golden Globe loose feel. You know, Daniel Kaluuya is funny, talking about his mom having sex, and that's why he's here and he's thankful.
Oh, yeah,
you
that know? Was good.
Yes, right.
That was good.
I appreciate it. What I missed was the opposite. Clips. And America could probably use some clips, too. You know, if you show a little clip of One Night in Miami, maybe people want to see it. But instead, you had the bad call of this self-important monologues about the nominees, which don't help, you know, Hollywood get over its sort of elitist tag
you
from,
get nothing.
You know, the right.
You lose. Good day, sir.
Yep, so, yeah, Sean's on the board.
But this
today.
Was like, you know, Laura Dern's out there going, I am serious. Lakeith Stanfield, your performance showed us all that blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, come on, just show a clip of him being great, and if he wins, he wins. So, you know, it was a mixed bag of things. I didn't hate it entirely. Of course, it's about movies, so I love it. But they could have – I missed all the musical nominees. They played during the pre-show, and no one alerted me. So I don't watch the pre-show because it's usually red carpet nonsense, people saying bullet points or plugging things, and it's dopey and I don't care. But I missed all the performances, so that was kind of a bummer too.
Yeah, I think for me, I actually liked the way everything looked overall. I thought it was kind of odd to have it in Union Station. But I thought that they dressed it, the Grand Hall, properly, though, to make it look nice. I don't know why they couldn't go back to the original place, which was the Roosevelt Hotel, knowing that they were going to have an intimate type of setting overall. Maybe because it was indoors, I don't know, but of course, so is the Grand Hall, you know, at Union Station. But to me, it made me wonder what the original Oscars looked like the very first time. You know, so to me, I like the intimate setting. And like Paul was saying, I like the speeches. Let them have the speeches and everything. you know, but the overall look, I thought it was kind of cool.
Art Deco.
Yeah, very Art Deco. And then the way they did the patio outside looked beautiful, you know, even afterwards when they're doing the interviews and so forth. So and maybe that was the reason why, because you could go from the Great Hall right into that patio area right away. So, but
if they would have had Trevor Noah host, it would have been much better. That's just my opinion.
I think if they had a host, period, it would have gone a little bit better. But
I agree. What do we have to pay Seinfeld to get him to do this already? I mean, for years, he would have been the best host, and I'd still like to see it, even though
even Kimmel. Yeah,
or what?
Or even Jimmy Kimmel.
His bits were awesome. At least he massaged things like the end of that fiasco with the La La Land and Moonlight. This one, of course, they save it till the end when Chadwick Boseman's supposed to win and we're supposed to have an emotional moment. Boop, surprise, Anthony Hopkins wins. Proof that the PricewaterhouseCoopers guys are not full of shit. Mm. And but then he's not there. He's at his father's grave, you know, and so the next day, you know, Hopkins makes a video and he thanks the Academy and shouts out to Boseman, and it's really nice. But the fact that he's not there, it's just this awkward ending, and they leave it to Joaquin Phoenix to go, bye, everybody. You know, and he's fine, but he's not like the comedian who could come out and really massage that moment, bring the show to a close. I mean, I do totally miss the host. I mean,
yeah, because I think Kimmel hosted it, he probably would have gone down to the train tracks themselves and done something there on the train.
Yeah, exactly.
You were just some cringe.
Got on a Metrolink or something.
Yeah, we're in tunnel number 3. You waiting for the 451 from Fullerton.
Exactly.
Some bit where he's welcoming new actors to L.A. and he's like filling their heads with dreams or reality or something funny, you know? Mm. Wow, this is L.A. Yes, you're going to be a multi-million dollar actor. Oh, wow. And, like, it's just crazy bit. His bits were like bringing the tour bus into the theater. And then at one time he sent like the stars into the Chinese theater next door and to the Dolby and like had him distribute snacks and stuff like quite close, bringing the M&Ms. Yeah, it was great. Those were great bits.
Paul, with the way things were going with the Academy, you know, we got a few bit of insights of what's to come. And I know I had heard about it and everything, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, why do it? Why bother? I mean, it's already a classic as it is, but at the same token, I was kind of happy to hear who was at the helm, which is Steven Spielberg, which is he's redoing West Side Story. And then the other day I saw that they're also going to redo Father of the Bride. you know.
Yeah.
Do you think Hollywood is going to be starting doing, you know, redoing films all over again, that a lot of it still remembers some of the originals?
They've been doing it. I mean, they've been doing it. Like, if I said, who do you think of when you think of Total Recall?
It's not a tumor.
Get your ass to Mars. Go now. See you at the party, right? All that.
Yeah.
But
like, she got three boobies.
What do you think of when you think of Fright Night? Think of Chris Sarandon and the Roddy McDowell and that whole thing. No, but both the remakes had Colin Farrell. But you don't think of Colin Farrell because these remakes are nostalgia grabs, trying to make more new content based on old properties people have heard of. They're counting on you to know, oh, I like that, I'll go see it again. But it rarely stays with you. Occasionally it does. West Side Story certainly looks like it has a chance to. That movie looks beautiful.
Yeah, I mean...
But will we care? It's really a tough call. I don't know.
Yeah, because it looks like, I mean, he's did something, whatever, with, I guess, like maybe the lens or something, a filter on it, where it looks like it's an updated version of 1961. You know?
Yeah, there's something that gives it an old school cinematography look. Yeah, and of course, the way they frame the shots, the wide shots of people dancing just looked like old Jerome Robbins, you know, excellence that won an Oscar previously. But yeah, it's a tough call. And with, like, West Side Story, of course, is put up on stages across the country every year, multiple hundreds maybe of times. Like, right. The show is just constantly produced. So maybe you could just say, yeah, we can make another movie of it too. But I always think that when it's on film, it's locked, it's done. Like, I had a buddy of mine who wanted to make an actor demo reel, but he didn't have any footage. He's like, oh, I just want to shoot some stuff to make it look like I've done some things. To which I say, hey, yeah, short films, web series, these are things that no one's going to know that are, you know, he wanted to shoot like the scene from A Few Good Men. I can't handle the truth. I'm like, that's done. But Nicholson closed the book on that.
Small and obscure,
like,
sir.
Wait.
People are going to know. You just did a scene for your acting demo reel. You didn't, like, you weren't in this movie.
I think I have your friend's demo reel with me. Hold on.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Was that it?
Oh, that was actually pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Okay,
turned out better than I thought. Here is me giving stupid advice.
Okay.
anyway, it's, I think once it's on film, it's done. But I mean, if you people try and do it again and... I guess, you know, people can still go to these West Side Story shows across the country.
I mean, how many times is a Star Is Born? I mean, the next grab that.
I think because the recent one's, the fifth time that it's been done?
No, that was the third.
No.
Well, we have Judy Garland.
And there was one before Stiles, that.
And Chris Christopherson. And there was one before that,
Judy Garland.
What was that?
Janet Gaynor did it before.
See, there you go.
Judy. So they just keep making this movie over and over again. And, you know, remaking it with Bradley Cooper, they have new things to say because the state of the music industry has certainly changed a ton since Barbra. But, you know, it going in and knowing kind of what's going to happen is just, you know, it can only yield so much reward. Whereas I watched this movie, The White Tiger, the other day. It was the only Oscar nominee I hadn't seen. It was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, and that movie was dope!
I loved it, too! And the book is really good. I listened to the book on tape, on the audiobook, and it was damn good. If I suggest it, if you like the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it. So, like, that kind of just, if it was, like, another time someone had made The White Tiger, it would have been like,
I love that movie, too, Paul.
But
loved
this just
too.
Comes out of nowhere, like, boom, right across. Whoa, what a great movie. Just, it's, you know, it takes place in India, but it's an easy comparison to Slumdog Millionaire, but it's a comparison to both because it's kind of a crime story meets a, you know, pseudo love story, but... mainly, it's just based on a book, so it's just thick with story, and you never know what's going to happen next. And if I go see West Side Story, I know exactly what's going to happen next, which is a shame. I'll just want to see how beautiful they do it. And I think I can only have so much reaction emotionally to something like that. But we'll see. I'm always open to be surprised because it's a movie, and I want to love it.
Okay, one more question, one more thing. Mortal Kombat.
Oh, that movie was dumb.
I didn't expect
But did you expect less?
Well, I thought it was really okay, thanks. I thought it was really true to like the game. Like it was like it followed the, you know, like the all the game arc perfectly. With,
like the power ups too and everything.
Listen, I don't play the game, but the movie is about the you know, like a dark world and a light world, and the dark world wants to kill everybody in the light world before the Mortal Kombat tournament even happens.
Uh-huh.
So is that what happens in the game? Because I would think the game is the tournament.
It's well, yeah, but it's, there's tons of game lore behind it. So I mean, you know, that's everybody gets into the backstory. So I liked it. I thought it was. I had a lot of fun watching the martial arts in it. I thought that was really
martial
fun.
Martial arts were great. Hiroyuki Sanada, who plays Hanzo in it, is great in everything. He's great in the Wolverine. He's great in Last Samurai. The guy's awesome. He's in Endgame. But there's scenes where, like, one character is like, "You brought me back to life."
Yeah.
And I'm like, was this – how?
Who wrote
and then,
this?
Is this something we were shooting for? I didn't even know it was on the table. And how? And you can just come back like, and then suddenly, like, people who are human can suddenly earn their Mortal Kombat tattoo. I'm like, they just here. We're just changing stuff halfway through the movie, well, just because
it just they followed the dumb. They followed the game lore and they used lots of game dialogue. That was the weird part. I think that just came off strange.
Yeah, but I could do the Romeo and Juliet monologue. We'll take in a crap, but you know, you're not gonna want to watch it.
True. All right, now we know Paul's
Or maybe
opinion.
Juliet.
At least we agree on the White Tiger, Paul. That's about it.
Look, it's a great looking film. I'll give you that. If you want action, there's no shortage. It's just dumb. And I went to the theater to see it because movies are back. So do yourself a favor, and if you want to see Mortal Kombat, don't watch on HBO Max. Get out to the theater because it's big and it's noisy.
Yeah.
And that will benefit the film for you.
Cool deal. All right, Paul. Well, thank you for joining us, buddy, and hopefully we'll hear more at the end of the month on what Hollywood's doing wrong.
Yes, we've got Guy Ritchie next week, that Wrath of Man with Jason Statham.
Oh,
I like to see him return to his sort of London streets gangster roots. You know, when he's a director for hire on things like Aladdin and King Arthur, just didn't do it for me. So the last movie he made was The Gentleman, and now this looks to be sort of in the same realm, maybe even tougher. I like that when he returns.
Fingers
to that. So
crossed.
That's going to kind of kick off the summer, May, whatever next week is, May 7th. So,
woo.
Awesome deal, buddy. All right, Paul, we'll catch you next time, bud.
Later.
All right, take care.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.